This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hungary warns that an EU plan to impose a price cap on Russian gas may trigger an immediate cutoff in Russia's gas supply. A major German gas importer seeks government aid and an energy crisis caused by plummeting Russian gas intensifies. And Iran test fires a new surface-to-surface domestically built missile during its military exercises. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gizumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Hungary says an EU plan to impose a price cap on Russian gas may trigger an immediate cutoff in Russia's gas supplies to Europe. The foreign minister says that a proposal against European and Hungarian interests, the price cap was announced by the European Commission on Wednesday. EU officials say the move will lower the cost of gas and would enable EU member states to support vulnerable households and companies. The bloc is split on the plan. Power and fuel prices have soared as Russia has cut the amount of gas it sends to Europe, with European leaders accusing Moscow of weaponizing energy supplies. Russia has blamed the supply cuts on technical issues. Moscow has warned that it will halt supply of oil and gas to countries in that impose a price cap on the country's energy. As an energy crisis deepens in Europe, Germany's third largest gas importer and storage operator, VNG, is the largest European energy firm to seek government aid. VNG asks for support to avoid further damage and to maintain the group's ability to act. VNG says gas quantities has to be produced at a significantly higher price with customers at significantly lower contractually agreed prices. The company says that this has led to a cash crunch. Russia has slowly dwindled gas supplies to Europe in recent months, sending fuel prices higher. Germany is bracing for further energy crunch as Russia extends the outage of gas supplies via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Uniper, Germany's biggest importer of Russian gas, asked for government support earlier this year. Queen Elizabeth II, who reigned for more than 70 years as Britain's monarch, has died at the age of 96, with her son Charles now succeeding her as king. In a statement, the Buckingham Palace has announced 10 days of mourning. It says the king and the queen consort will remain at the Royal House of Balmoral, Scotland, before returning to London on Friday. The national flags at Windsor Castle and other government buildings have been lowered to half-mast after the Queen's death was officially announced on Thursday afternoon. Officials, including newly appointed Prime Minister Liz Truss, mourned the passing away of the monarch.
We are all devastated by the news that we have just heard from Balmoral. The death of Her Majesty the Queen is a huge shock to the nation and to the world. Queen Elizabeth II was the rock on which modern Britain was built.
Truss said the Queen had been a personal inspiration to her and many Britons, adding that Britain grew and flourished under her reign. World leaders have also paid tribute to the Queen and expressed condolences to the British royal family Over her demise, Elizabeth was the longest-serving monarch in British history. Her reign began in February 1952. For more on that, we're joined by Saeed Puraza, our correspondent in London. Saeed, tell us more about what is going to happen, what are we expecting to happen over the course of the next 10 days?
It's an elaborate, series of events that will happen over the course of the next 10 days or so. Later this evening, we're expecting the now King Charles to address the nation, him having received the mantle from his mother, the Queen. It's going to happen this evening. And over the course of the next day, what we're going to see, among other things, most notably, is the different heads of state from around the world coming here to pay tribute to the deceased queen before rushing back to New York to attend the UN General Assembly. So that is going to happen, of course, at the 10th day, or if not longer, because we're not exactly clear on when the actual funeral is going to take place. But almost everything had been written down, different scenarios for these events to take place, depending on where the Queen would have breathed her last. She happened to have been in her favorite summer resort in Aberdeenshire, in the Balmoral Castle, where she passed away. There is this Operation Unicorn by which she her body will be transferred either by train or by plane to London, where she will be laid in estate for a while for those heads of state and others to pay tribute to, and then eventually the funeral. The whole event that will be taking place here will be based on another plan called Operation London Bridge, all written in black and white over the course of the next 10 days or so. But as we wait for that to happen, it is time for people to reflect on who she was and what she stood for and her legacy, perhaps, to her admirers, a lot of whom we saw earlier this morning. They're probably still there outside Buckingham Palace, laying floral tributes to the deceased monarch, and consider her as someone who was a beacon or a symbol of stability, of steering the country through some turbulent times and choppy waters, royal scandals to massive developments around the world, and other things. But to others, she stands as a representative of an institution that is associated with colonization, with imperialism, with which is also again associated bloodshed and violence and subjugation of other countries, starting right about around the time when she was taken over from her dad, who passed away suddenly while she was on a visit to Kenya. Rebellion called the Mau Mau uprising, or rebellion against colonization, was quashed by the British governor at the time, and more than a million people were put in different a series of concentration camps. There is that. Our part of the world, in the Middle East, you had the coordinated coup d'etat orchestrated by British and American agents that took down the democratically elected prime minister of Iran at the time, Mohammad Mossadegh, after he nationalized the Iranian oil industry. A few years later, in 1961, a state trip visit to Iran by the Queen and her deceased husband, Prince Philip. You saw the South African apartheid happen also during her reign, although she was on the record putting pressure on her prime minister at the time, Margaret Thatcher, to take a harder line on apartheid and release Nelson Mandela, the leader of the opposition to it, although Margaret Thatcher resisted it at the time, saying that it wouldn't have been to the benefit of British interests. Moving on to the 2000s, in 2003, for instance, the UK involvement in the Iraq war, Tony Blair, the prime minister at the time, one of the masterminds of the illegal war in Iraq, in search of weapons of mass destruction that were nowhere to be found for the next 20 years, Tony Blair only to be knighted by the Queen only last year. And a whole host of other issues. For instance, the dying of his grandchild, the king's former wife, Princess Diana, and which the kind of reaction that Buckingham Palace under the Queen exhibited came across as unfeeling towards her at the time, perhaps. In recent times, for instance, her other son, who was involved in a massive sexual scandal with an underage girl, you know the story, and that car crash interview that led to her stripping him of his royal titles, his second son being Prince Andrew. Although those things will be remembered as seminal events, developments that took place under the Queen's reign since he took power at the age of 25 when her dad passed away. Now, her son, of course, King Charles now will be in charge. There are noises, soundings that he will be a different monarch, others saying it'll be business as usual, a continuation of his mother's legacy, a man who has been waiting for this role, was groomed for this role for so many years. She started at 25. He will be starting at 73 at a time when you would think he would retire. But again, some are saying that he will be a different king. He will be a political king. And if so, some of the Republican voices here who believe that the monarchy is out of date, will have to be abolished, will, they say, have a chance to make that happen, for Britain to move away from being a constitutional monarchy to being a republic. Of course, that's something that only time will show. We'll have to see what kind of a king Prince Charles, now King Charles, will be. But as I said at the top, the Queen means different things to different people. Someone to look up to remember as a beacon of hope and stability for people who admire her, and for her role, the role that she played over the course of 70 years on the throne, and to others who were on the receiving end of British imperialism and colonialism over the centuries. She represents an institution that is way past its best by date.
Thank you very much, Saeed Pourreza, our correspondent, joining us live from London. Moving on, Iran has test-fired a surface-to-surface domestically developed missile as the Iranian Army's ground forces ramp up 2 days of military exercises. The Fateh-360 missile has a range of more than 120 kilometers. It can hit strategic targets at the speed of some 5,000 kilometers per hour. It can be launched from a multiple rocket launch system while communicating with satellites for quick navigation and utmost precision. The missile was test-fired in the second stage of Iqtadar 1401 drills in Isfahan province. The Army's infantry, armored artillery, and electronic warfare divisions took part in the two-day exercises that began on Wednesday. The U.S. says it has imposed sanctions on several Iranian companies over accusations that Tehran has sold drones to Russia to be used in the Ukraine war. The U.S. Treasury Department says one of the targeted companies coordinated the shipping of Iranian drones to Russia. Three other firms were allegedly involved in the research and development and production of Iranian military drones. Washington also warned non-Iranian companies against being involved in Iran's drone trade. The U.S. says Iran has sold Russia hundreds of drones to be used in the Ukraine war. Both Iran and Russia deny this. On Thursday, Russia demanded the U.S. to provide evidence supporting its claim that Russia seeks drones from Iran to use in Ukraine. Meanwhile, Tehran rejects anti-Iran accusations made by Persian Gulf Arab countries in the final communique of the 153rd ministerial meeting of the GCC. The foreign ministry spokesman, Nasser Kanani, says the three islands of Abu Musa, the Greater and Lesser Tombs, eternally belong to Iran. He said the biggest factors contributing to instability in the region are the U.S. and Israel. The spokesman says it is regrettable that GCC members have again voiced anti-Iran rhetoric instead of correcting their failed policies. The GCC statement stressed the need to address, quote, Iran's destabilizing behavior in the region. They also rejected what they called Iran's occupation of three islands of Greater Tomb, Lesser Tomb, and Abu Musa. Moving on, calls are growing in former colonies in the Caribbean to remove the British monarch as their head of state. That after the ascension of Charles to the UK throne and the death of her mother, Queen Elizabeth II. Some Commonwealth leaders have expressed unease about the passage of leadership from Elizabeth to Charles. There are doubts about the role a distant monarch should play in the 21st century. Jamaica and the Bahamas, people are calling for reparation and an apology for slavery. This while Barbados, one of the dozens of Caribbean nations which are Commonwealth members, ditched the Queen as head of state last year. Jamaica has signaled it may follow suit. A survey shows 56% of Jamaicans favor removing the British monarch as the head of state. Activists in the region also argue that Charles's accession is an opportunity to redouble calls for slavery and reparations. Firefighters in the U.S. are struggling to gain control of wildfires across the state of California as a seemingly endless heat wave persists in the region. The blaze that started burning on Monday outside the city of Los Angeles has expanded in two directions in western and eastern California and almost doubled in size in the past 24 hours. Thousands of people have been forced to evacuate the area, and two people have been killed. Officials say the fire has now engulfed more than 7,700 hectares, and only 5% of the wildfire has been contained. Another wildfire is also growing rapidly in the north of California, forcing thousands of others out of their homes. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on July 27, 2022.
The existence of the Islamic Republic has challenged and proven the falsity of the core identity of Western civilization. That is what irritates the Western powers, and they are angry. The reality of the Western powers is that they are a mafia. At the top of this mafia stand the Zionists, prominent Jewish businessmen, and the politicians that obey them. The US is their showcase, and they have spread out everywhere. This is the truth about the Western powers. They cannot tolerate this. So they are constantly thinking up new plans to do something against the Islamic Republic. For example, a topic that is being spoken about a lot recently is the topic of women in an Islamic society. Of course, it's a topic that has been spoken about since the beginning of the revolution. They falsely claim that they wanted to help and support Iranian women. And it is a topic that recently they have brought up again regarding hijab and similar issues. And they are repeating their previous failed attempts once again.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
A few years ago, someone asked me, "What defense do you have against the West regarding the issue of women?" My reply was, "I don't have a defense. I am the one that attacks. They are the ones who need to defend themselves. They are the ones who need to answer. They treat women like merchandise. Defense? I don't need a defense. We are the claimants in the case of women." Now, what's this all about? When we see a sudden uproar in the official British and American media, by their followers and by those hired by them, when they all suddenly start to attack on issues regarding women and use excuses such as hijab and other matters, what do you think is the reason behind this? Why do they do these things? Do they really want to defend Iranian women and their rights? Aren't they the ones who would cut off the water supply to our people if they had the chance? They feel sorry for Iranian women? They have used sanctions to block access to medicine for children with butterfly disease. For children! They've placed all kinds of sanctions against the people of Iran. They're concerned about Iranian women? Can anyone believe such a thing? So what is this all about? The fact is that honorable, talented Iranian women are amongst those who have struck the Western civilization one of the hardest blows. So, they hold a grudge. Women have done this.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
True to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
The American perception of U.S. global image is not in good shape. Nearly half of Americans believe their country's influence in the world is getting weaker. Most Americans do not think Joe Biden is doing a good enough job. And as it gets closer to Senate elections, Republicans and Democrats are throwing wild punches at each other, hoping it lands in the right place, knocking out their opponent. The FBI raided Donald Trump's home in Florida, which prompted him to call the U.S. a failing nation in decline. So what is obvious is that the country is divided, and no one seems to be happy with the events that are unfolding.
Losing sway.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we'll discuss the country's global image as perceived by Americans, political infighting, and a bid to win Senate majority this November. The FBI raid on Donald Trump's Florida residence, and what will happen if Trump announces that he intends to run for the 2024 presidential race. As usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Lori Calhoun, senior fellow at the Libertarian Institute and author of We Kill Because We Can, From Soldiering to Assassination in the Drone Age and War and Delusion, and Jamal Thomas of Fault Lines on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. Stay tuned.
Americans have many issues to complain about, whether it's racism, inequality, the economy, corruption, climate change, education, or the standard of living, their criticism did not extend to global influence. Historically, most Americans perceived their country's global image and influence as strong. Throughout the years, this has changed. A recent poll by Pew Research shows that most Americans believe that U.S. influence in the world is declining. Only one in five Americans thinks that the country's global influence has been getting stronger, while nearly half of Americans say that the United States is quickly losing sway in the global arena.
America is reeling from its failed war in Afghanistan. It's the latest in a catalog of problems, from increasing social division and political paralysis at home, to its seeming inability to lead a global mission to tackle climate change. This, against the backdrop of an increasingly dominant China, has led many to believe America is losing its power and standing in the world.
Now, in contrast to American belief that the country is losing influence in the world, most of the people polled believe that China's influence is growing. Views of participants in the poll differed largely depending on their party affiliation. Now, Republicans and Republican-leaning independents were much more likely to believe that the U.S. was losing influence in the world, while Democrats were less likely to believe the same. So what is the status of U.S. influence in the world today?
That's an interesting one. The status of the influence of the United States is, look, it's degrading, right? And it's this notion of going from this unipolar world to a multipolar world and what that looks like in practice. And all things being equal, I think what this looks like in practice is events like Ukraine. It's like provocations with China, for example, that could have turned out all sorts of disastrous. But if you're looking at Ukraine is a really good example of this idea of, okay, we're going to exert a certain amount of militaristic power and economic might. And for the most part, both of those things come into bad ends. And when the U.S. basically needs to exert this kind of soft influence in order to make the fact that this is coming to bad ends, to make that more, to make it go down better to the populations. Well, they can't do it. You get countries like Turkey that are basically aligning themselves closer and closer with Russia. You get countries in the Middle East that basically did not provide the gas or the oil that Joe Biden needed and the many European nations need it. You got many of the other nations basically standing back and allowing the West to basically fail. They didn't get involved in this fool's errand. So I think what you're seeing on some level is, yeah, you're seeing this kind of degradation of hegemonic power in favor of a multipolar world.
Now, depending on which party holds power in the country, with a deep divide that's been growing every single year, opposing party supporters are likely to believe that their country is becoming weaker, holds much less influence in the world, and that their global image is looking weaker and less appealing. So how does American perception of U.S. global image affect the government's foreign policy?
More Americans are concerned with domestic issues, and they aren't necessarily in tune to what's going on the global front. And so I think that we're at an interesting period in history where the war on terror has wound down to a great extent, but we have conflicts going on various fronts simultaneously. And many Americans are really consumed with their current financial situation. They were affected adversely by the handling of the COVID crisis, the lockdowns, which caused many businesses to close, which led to a lot of people losing their jobs. We also have a housing crisis here and a significant degree of inflation. So people seem to be, here on the ground, they seem to be more concerned with financial issues domestically than in what's going on abroad. And I think that they are habituated to signing off on foreign policy. So whatever our government does, they just leave it to, quote unquote, the experts and worry more about what's going on here.
During the presidency of George W. Bush and Donald Trump, it was the Democrats who mostly believed that the country was losing influence in the world. It was George W. Bush's so-called war on terror that brought with it strong criticisms from people and governments around the world, and with it popular American belief that the country is losing face and influence around the globe.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan. This military action is a part of our campaign against terrorism.
So would the American perception of U.S. global image have any impact on the presidential elections?
It won't. That one is easy. It won't. Foreign policy oftentimes doesn't play a huge role in the presidential elections. It's very rare. Usually that stuff is based on domestic politics. I mean, for that matter, many things that take place globally, it doesn't bite into the population. It doesn't bite. And because it doesn't bite, it doesn't necessarily have a huge amount of impact on who we choose to be president. This year might be different just because of the Ukraine war and the argument that Donald Trump is going to make going after Joe Biden, basically saying we're $30 trillion in debt. You gave these guys $60 billion. We're losing this war economically. My name is Trump. I wouldn't have gotten us into the war. That could be that.
According to Pew Research, those respondents with a higher level of international knowledge were more likely to believe that China, India, and Germany have had growing international influence in recent years. Among China, India, Germany, Russia, France, UK, and the United States, high international knowledge Americans singled out the United States as the only country they believed was getting weaker in influencing the world.
The way that the media and the way that the political class talks about us hasn't necessarily changed. The public may get this impression that we are weakening in our status in the world, our power in the world is weakening. And they're seeing that just reflected through, let's say, Afghanistan, the number of people who die from COVID, what's taking place in Ukraine right now from a militaristic and from an economic standpoint. So they can see it reflected in it, even if it's not the way that the media basically discusses and talks about it. Now, the issue more than anything else is, how do we view ourselves in relation to what we really are? That's the issue. Like, if your self-conception of yourself is out of alignment with what you are basically trying to do in the real world, then you're going to suffer as a result of that. And I think that's basically what we're seeing. We have not accepted this idea that it's a unipolar world. And because we haven't accepted this idea, I'm sorry, multipolar world. And because we haven't accepted this idea that it's a multipolar world, we still function as if might makes right, as if you don't need to negotiate, if you can take these kind of maximalist positions. Or for that matter, as if the things that you don't have consequences that basically affect you directly at home.
The United States has rapidly destroyed its global image, even in the eyes of its allies. Since Donald Trump took power and in the aftermath of the 2020 elections, what the world has mostly seen from U.S. politics is division, infighting, and almost no mutual trust between the two main American parties. The internal strife reveals itself now and again with claims of voter fraud still not solved among Trump's supporters, the January 6th committee going after Trump, and more recently with the FBI raid on Donald Trump's Florida home.
That's a good that, as I said, I think on the war front and on the military intervention front, Democrats and Republicans form an alliance, which is pretty much impenetrable. We have lots of divisions, though, domestically between these two camps. So they agree on the global front, but they disagree about a number of issues on the domestic front. I mean, top of the list is abortion. Another issue is gun rights, and a third issue is just freedom of speech, whether the government should be censoring the speech of critics. And these are really deep divisions, and they've been brought out over the past few years as one side has pursued a program of delegitimizing Donald Trump, and the other one has pursued the program of upholding the legitimacy of his presidency. We have some people who don't really take a stand on Donald Trump, but the division between the anti-Trump and the pro-Trump people has been really deep, and it just continues on and on long after his presidency.
On August 8th, former President Donald Trump announced that FBI agents searched his Mar-a-Lago residence in Palm Beach, Florida, and had broken open a safe. Trump called the FBI raid an assault, and it caused an uproar among the Republicans and Trump supporters. Former Vice President Mike Pence wrote on Twitter that no former president of the United States has ever been subject to a raid of their personal residence in American history.
It's most likely that Donald Trump did do something that he had no business doing. Yes, he most likely did have documents that he had no business having. That is also true. He most likely did not declassify those documents. That is definitely also true. His supporters are not going to care one iota. From their standpoint, this is a witch hunt. This witch hunt started when Donald Trump took office, and this witch hunt is continuing right now in order to keep him from running for office. Look, I don't know what that looks like in practice. But the Republican Party is not abandoning Donald Trump. And so up to this point, Big Papa is still in charge of the party. So because they're not abandoning Trump, it's one political party that has all the incentives in the world to back their guy against another political party that at this point has the access to the Justice Department. That looks bad for Democrats. By the same token, Trump most likely is guilty.
And now Donald Trump's allies in Congress have vowed to launch an investigation into the FBI raid of his Mar-a-Lago home if they're to win control of the House of Representatives and the Senate in the November midterm elections. Interestingly, the White House spokeswoman said that President Joe Biden was not given advance notice by the FBI of the raid and that he, quote unquote, learned about this from public reports. She added that not the president or anyone else in the White House knew that the raid was coming.
People are facing. I mean, I think that people who are angry at what looks like the political use of the FBI against a former president are again going to vote to get the current office holders out of Washington, if possible.
The FBI raid might have played right into Trump's hands. The former president released a video calling America a failing nation and a nation in decline. He says, we are a nation that has the highest inflation in over 40 years, where the stock market just finished the worst first half of a year in more than five decades. He also mentions that America is begging Venezuela and Saudi Arabia for oil, and that over the past 2 years is no longer respected all around the world.
We are a nation in decline. We are a failing nation. We are a nation that has the highest inflation in over 40 years, where the stock market just finished the worst first half of a year in more than five decades. We are a nation that has the highest energy cost in its history, and we are no longer energy independent or energy dominant, which we were just two short years ago. We are a nation that is begging Venezuela and Saudi Arabia for oil. We are a nation that surrendered in Afghanistan, leaving behind dead soldiers, American citizens, and $85 billion worth of the finest military equipment in the world?
I think it's not that important for the voters, mainly because they don't know what it is. So most Americans don't travel, and their image of the United States government's interventions abroad is completely determined by what they see on the television, which is definitely promoting a pro-U.S. perspective, particularly since the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which effectively legalized the propagandization of citizens by the government. So the network news shows us one perspective of what's going on. And if people don't leave the United States or seek out alternative media, they have no idea what any other – what possibly could be negative about anything that we do. So I think that it doesn't affect most people because most people are ignorant of what outsiders might believe. And I also believe that there's a lot of trepidation on the part of outsiders, particularly allies who live in allied countries with the United States, to express any sort of significant criticism of our policies. I think we might see a change this year because of the sanctions on Russia, which are directly affecting the population of Europe.
Some believe that this video was Donald Trump's announcement for running for re-election in 2024. Donald Trump's daughter-in-law said Democrats were terrified that Trump would announce another White House bid any day. Laura Trump said on Fox News that the FBI raid on the former president's home was about weaponizing the justice system, as it has been so many times in the past, against somebody who you politically do not like.
The public's distrust in politicians who seem to be only trying to destroy their opponent instead of solving the country's dire problems is evidence of more trouble to come. Biden had promised to unite the country, but it seems his political party and administration is more worried about going after the Republicans and the former president than to fulfill his campaign promise. In light of all the domestic problems, it is no wonder that the people think their country is losing global influence.
The American population, all things being equal, left to its own devices, wouldn't necessarily be hawkish. Oftentimes, it's a framing and a perspective that is given to that population to get them on board for this war or for that war. Donald Trump is interesting only in the sense that he has been more skeptical of some of the foreign escapades, even of things like NATO. So Donald Trump will basically go after those things in a way that other presidents wouldn't. Donald Trump is most likely going to make an argument against Ukraine in order to make an argument against Joe Biden, in which case foreign policy may actually come up in this particular election. But even then, it's being used as a political thing. It's not necessarily something that the American public makes a choice on and push and the government responds. That's not the way it is. Foreign policy oftentimes matters less to the American population than domestic. It sounds weird, especially with the footprint of the U.S. in the world, but it is true.
Now, Joe Biden and the Democratic Party's fear that they will lose the House's majority in the upcoming midterm elections has made them act desperately, like the primetime live broadcast of the January 6th committee or the raiding of Donald Trump's home. Now, whether these actions would give the Democratic Party any leverage in the elections remains to be seen. But what is clear is that these activities will cause more enmity in an already very divided country. It is no wonder that so many Americans believe there is a civil war in the making. And now on this episode of Power to the People by Abbas Muntaqim, we'll look at why he says imperialism today is on the decline.
With an emerging multipolar world, the influence of U.S. imperialism on the global community is getting weaker. And this lack of influence, it didn't just appear out of nowhere. It's a result of anti-imperialist movements that have been resisting the hegemony of the USA and its pan-European front called NATO. On this episode of Power to the People, we'll look at why imperialism is in decline and what is needed for imperialism to fully stop. First, we must look at the recent major conflict that the United States is engaged in. It's no secret that the USA has backed Ukraine in its war against Russia's special operation. And the war, it isn't going as planned for the West and for NATO. It's important that we understand that war itself is always economic, and the Russian ruble has increased and the Russian economy has expanded. America's economy, on the other hand, it's in a state of recession, and Europe's economy has also taken major losses, and the euro and the dollar were equal for the first time in 20 years. And questions about how much gas Europe will have is also a major question for Europe. A part of this war was also waging sanctions against Russia. This strategy by the West was aimed at crippling the Russian economy and stirring up unrest within its borders. But it's had a different outcome, as Russia has increased its cooperation with nations like Iran that have also been subjected to inhumane sanctions. Russia has also increased and strengthened its bilateral cooperation with Venezuela, which has also suffered from illegal sanctions by the West. With this, Russia itself has been able to maintain its economic power while also deepening ties with nations that have been attacked by Western imperialism. It's now removing Western influence from these regions, and countries that have suffered from the inhumane sanctions, they don't have to negotiate as much with the West, as now there's an actual viable alternative in Russia as well as China. This is undoubtedly a major blow to U.S. imperialism and Western dominance economic hierarchy over the whole world. With this emerging multipolar world and countries becoming free from the heel of imperialism, we must ask this question: what is the future of U.S. imperialism? It's important that we understand that U.S. imperialism is always in a constant state of change and expansion, meaning that the USA, it will be forced to depart one country, and then what will it do? It'll immediately move to another. An example of this is Afghanistan, as the USA left after decades of a genocidal war and then immediately began this proxy war with Russia, in which it is supporting Ukraine by sending over $1 billion in military support and aid. Not only that, but the USA, they have also deployed special operations troops in Sudan, again proving the point that imperialism is in a constant state of change and expansion. We must understand that imperialism itself, it will not end itself. It has to be destroyed and brought to an end. And part of bringing imperialism to an end means creating something new. This will only happen through the culmination of positive action, which is complete revolution and emancipation from the colonial system. The world will never truly be free if the USA and its imperialism expansion is allowed to exist. The imperialist machine must be destroyed for the world to have an opportunity for peace. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
past Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
Light of Allah, you are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to the program, The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab Askari. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Dr. Ali Alavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Well, Dr. Alavi, in our previous session, you told us about that Ashura should be recognized by all by the time of uprising. But as of now, we don't see Ashura that much, like, known by people all around the world. But is it possible until the uprising that everyone is aware about Ashura, everyone recognizes Ashura before the uprising? You gave us a beautiful example of Arba'een. Is there something more to add on that?
Yeah, that's true. Since the motto and the slogan of the troops of Imam Zaman alayhi salam at the time of his advent is Ya Allah Tharat al-Hussein, that is, those who are after the revenge of the blood of Imam al-Hussein, it means that there should be something that the people all know Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and they are now going to take a revenge from the people who actually oppressed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So this should happen somehow. So what is the quality and what is the way that this happens? This is something that we just can actually guess that it should happen in this way.
Yeah.
Because when we are waiting for a worldwide revolution by Imam Zaman alayhi salam, we cannot expect Imam Zaman, for example, to come for a part of the world, let's say, for example, for the people of Iran or the people of Iraq or the... No, Imam Zaman is the leader of the whole inhabitants of the earth. So he is the last savior that we are talking about, and he's going to save the whole world. So it means that based on many hadith, we understand that before he arrives, the media of Imam Zaman reached to its peak so that this media could introduce Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the way that it has to.
There are people from Hinduism, from Sikhism, who believe that a savior is going to come. Like, some call him Lord
Definitely.
Krishna,
yeah.
Some call him Guru, and some call him Imam Zaman.
Very true.
So, like, I can say that Shias have some knowledge towards the Ashura, but how would the other people who are waiting for the Savior recognize Ashura?
Exactly. Again, referring to verse 2 of chapter Nasr, Surah An-Nasr, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَرَأَيْتَ النَّاسَ يَدْخُلُونَ فِي دِينِ اللَّهِ أَفْوَاجًا, in order for the people to come and join Imam Zaman and the deen of Islam, the deen, religion of Islam, in huge groups and numbers. So it has to happen in some way. How is it like? How is it going to happen? We can't guess based on what happened in last years, for example, with the issue of Arba'een. Arba'een is one sign and signal that tells us, okay, out of no time, we can see millions of people come to the streets of Iraq and go
and nothing
walk
stops
towards
them. You know, like, I mean, we even in this year, we saw, like, very severe riots. We saw political condition getting...
Very true.
Yeah.
But the situation got facilitated again.
Yeah.
Definitely. Inshallah, there would be no obstacle on, the, on
Inshallah.
Its way. So more than 30 million people are coming and walking. So it brings a big question mark to the minds of the people. What is it? Why all these people are walking this way?
Is that a normal trip, or it contains some messages as well?
Definitely. Yeah. It will be a good, let's say, point for the people to ponder.
Yeah.
So what happened that all these people are going towards that Karbala? So are they really mourning and doing azadari for a person who died, let's say, 1,400 years ago?
Yeah.
So is it possible? Are they mad or insane?
Yeah.
So these questions are good.
These questions arise, and people... we'll get answers, inshallah.
Definitely.
We'll talk more on that after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old pain.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. I'm with Dr. Ali Alavi, and we are talking about the relationship between Ashura and Mehtaviyat. And we are talking about the fact that Ashura will be recognized by all the people of the world, all freedom lovers, before the uprising of Imam Mahdi. And how is that possible? Dr. Ali Alavi is telling us. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have been talking that the medium of Arba'in by itself is a great media.
Yeah.
So Arba'in, the same way that it worked in the last 1400 years, this time it will show itself, I think, even greater than before. Look, the policy that was taken by Imam Sajjad and Lady Zainab Salamul Aliha to revive what happened in Ashura, what happened in the land of Karbala, is going to work now. So Arba'in can show itself here again. So what is our duty as a Muslim? We said as a Muslim, as a waiter of Imam Zaman, as a Shia, as a follower of the Maktab of Ahlul, as a Muslim in general. So what is our duty? To introduce Arba'in in the right way that it is needed to be introduced. We have to play our role also in this universe.
Yeah.
What is our way? One, whoever has any potentiality, any power, any skill, any talent, based on what that talent that he or she has or actually enjoys with, we have to talk about. So look, isn't it a case of unity of the Islamic Ummah that collects and gathers this huge number of people in one place
without borders?
No, we don't want to say that all of them are Shias. Yes, majority of them are followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, but all of them are not Shias.
Not all are Shias.
We have seen, as I said and we said earlier, we have seen followers of other religions. We have seen from other denominations.
A number of journalists attracts, this gathering attracts a number of
journalists. So we don't want to make it special for the Shias. No, it's for all the followers of the Islamic schools.
I don't remember which country it was, though, but in one of the majalises of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, a lady comes in, a non-Muslim lady who is not bearing a child, who is not able to give birth to a child, and then she comes into this majlis with a flag of Hussein, and when people tell her, like, you're non-Muslim and how you're here, and she tells them, I heard Hussein is for all.
Mm,
so,
definitely.
Here also, Hussein belongs to all.
Exactly. So Imam Hussein, the same way that Imam Hussein belonged to all, Imam Zaman will belong to all.
Yes.
Imam Hussein, the concept that Imam Hussein was after freedom, social justice, spirituality, I don't know, kindness, being merciful.
Yeah.
All these high ideals that were coming to us through the message of Ashura are the ones that Imam Zaman going to bring back to us.
Yeah.
So this is what the medium of Arba'in will do and will work, inshallah, as a media, and will introduce Imam Hussein to the whole world before the advent of Imam Zaman. And it doesn't need a long time to happen. The same way that it happened to us.
Yes.
Even for us, as the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, we did not expect such a thing to happen within 10 years at most.
Yeah.
Right? No one could understand, for example, the work of Arba'in before the revolution, before the Islamic